Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining Ball 5 Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Livingstone. And this week, we're going to do an interview with John Byington and talk about the 1989 season. But those guys are having their reunion next week before the Georgia series. So I'm going to push that back a week and hopefully meet with John again and some of the other guys. So on this episode, we're going to recap the Vandy series and talk about the ranking, new rankings that are out, as well as answer a direct message on Instagram, the question I had about some of the famous people that I met along the way during my big league career. So let's get to it. All right, so first things first, I'm just going to throw it out there. I am hard to impress. I am very hard to impress, and I don't know if that's because I played in the big leagues for the 8 years, accomplished the things that I've accomplished, but I am very hard to impress. And I have one thing to say about these guys. Wow, this team, legit. To see these guys play day in and day out and the energy they bring to the field along with their talent and their know-how to take an extra base or make a pitch, I mean, it is awesome to see. And all I can say is, wow, they are extremely impressive. Okay, game one, 15-0, 7 innings, run ruled, the number 6 team in the country. We do a good job of making the top 10 teams in the country that we play not look like they should be in the top 10. So how can you not start with Ryan Prager? Wow, the job he did on the mound. 7 innings, complete game. He's 7-0 now. 4 hits. And I really enjoy writing this down. 0 walks. It's a good habit. 10 Ks. So, I mean, the guy was legit. Showing up, showing out, man. He's fun to watch pitch, his intensity, and he just smart on the mound. Great guy to watch pitch. As far as the hitters, Gavin, what man, 10 pitch leadoff walk. That's what you want your leadoff hitter to do, and I mean, the guy can still bang it out of the ballpark or over the scoreboard on one pitch. So that was a huge, huge at-bat for him to get the game started. Jace, I mean, controlling those hands inside the ball for a nice home run to get us started. Braden, same thing. I mean, these were back-to-back home runs. Pulled his hands inside too. I mean, the way that these guys are able to understand the swing, and it's not an inside-out swing. They're still taking straight lines to the ball, but it's more of an in-out, not inside-out kind of loop around. It's straight to the ball, and so it's a lot of fun to watch. Hayden Schott, same thing. Nice shot to left field. So these guys are very impressive when they're swinging the bat. Schott, you know, he goes to left, then he goes to right for a nice base hit. So, you know, watching these guys hit, it's a lot of fun, and that's why at the beginning of this I said, wow. Jace with 2 home runs, 6 RBIs. Braden, 2 home runs. Burton with a nice oppo shot to right field. So I tell you what, they handled the bat. Game two, Tanner Jones. Great effort today on the hill. 7 1/3 innings. Gave up 6 hits. Only 1 walk. 5 Ks. Aschenbeck coming in and doing his job for an inning and 2/3 with 3 Ks. Guys are getting it done on the bump. Grahovac, leadoff home run. I really believe that rattled that pitcher for the inning for us to get 5 runs. That jump started everything. Looked like it might have been a hanging slider, but that's a good pitcher out there on the mound, and they were pretty high on him facing the Ags and shutting down our high-powered offense, but didn't work out in the leadoff spot, did it? Jace and Braden, they didn't have any hits, but they're always affecting the game one way or another. I mean, Jace had 2 runs, 2 walks, Braden with a walk and an RBI, Hayden Schott with a nice double, and then you get RBIs from Appel, Camarillo, Sorrell, and Chestnut. The bottom half of the lineup is doing the job too, so even if the top 3 or 4 aren't hitting, you're still getting production from the guys at the bottom of the lineup. They're still going to have productive at-bats, and they can pop it out of the yard just as well as we've seen Chestnut do, and trying to win that free base battle. For example, in the 8th inning, Vandy was pitching. They hit one of our guys. They walked. Error. Wild pitch. Walk. Led to 2 runs. So you want to win that free base battle. If you can do that, you got a good chance, especially with our lineup where everybody can hit, they understand it, and they can knock in a run at any time. Game 3, 12-6 win to complete the series sweep. Awesome. Grahovac, 3-for-4 at the home run and a double, 2 RBIs. Jace, 2-for-4 with 2 RBIs. Braden had a really nice double. Camarillo with a 3-run home run. And leading up to that, Schott had reached on an error with the score 4-to-4 with 2 outs. That made it 5-to-4. And then Ali hits a 3-run homer. So giving our lineup an extra out, that's pretty dangerous. Imagine giving us 4 outs every inning. That'd be kind of tough facing this lineup. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Chris Cortez. 4 1/3 inning, 8 Ks. That's a power arm with an effective slider. And when he's got that going, he's tough. Very tough. Some big league team's going to grab him. And I got to mention those crowds. Over 7,000 fans in the stands for all 3 games. I think Saturday had over 8,000. So for the series, 22,489 in attendance. That's awesome. Ags are showing up. All right, moving on. Air Force, Tuesday, coming to Bluebell Park. And then we head to Tuscaloosa for another SEC road matchup against Alabama. Looking at Alabama and what they've kind of done so far, they've just kind of stayed in the middle of the pack, not showing anything really standing out. But they did take 2 of 3 from Arkansas, which, according to D1, was the number one team in the country. But we've seen it before. Teams that aren't playing that good at the beginning of the year, they kind of start getting stronger and stronger, and they're getting better as they're going. So Alabama's going to be tough, especially playing them at home where they had a good series against Arkansas. And so it should be a good matchup. And I also want to mention congratulations to Gavin Grahovac, Freshman of the Week, and to Chris Cortez, Co-Pitcher of the Week. Awesome job, guys. All right, so after our series sweep against Vandy this past weekend, the new rankings came out. Texas A&M, right where they deserve to be, number one. So if you listened to one of my episodes, I don't know if it was 1 or 2, where I talked about rankings and stats, and a lot of that stuff did not matter at the beginning of the year because you weren't playing like opponents against all the other teams that were ranked. And so you didn't really have a good comparison for stats between everybody. But now, seeing how far we are in the SEC schedule and in the season, basically halfway through the season, it's a good barometer now to look at and to measure everybody, because A&M definitely deserves to be number one. You got people saying, I'm sure, over the water coolers or whatever, it doesn't matter unless you're number one at the end of the year and you're celebrating on the field at Omaha. That's true. And the players and the coaches in the clubhouse, they understand that. They get that. They're not getting too high on being number one. But it does validate the hard work that they've put in, what the coaches have done, the hard work they've put in. So it validates everything that they've been doing to work towards the end goal, which is celebrate at Omaha. And being ranked number one excites the fans. Even the parents are putting it on their social media. The players are putting it on their social media, even though they still understand that it doesn't mean anything until you finish the season. And former players are putting it on. So Tex Aggs is talking about it. They put it on theirs. Aggie baseball, all the social media, Instagrams, they're putting number one team and post on their social media. So having them do that, it excites them. It gives people something to talk about. Fans are excited about the rankings, and I would take notice of it now because it's well-deserved. I was telling somebody this weekend, if we're not the number one team in the country, then Arkansas and Clemson should be playing in a minor league schedule or on a major league schedule, because we definitely deserve. And plus, it's crazy the numbers that these guys are putting up against good competition. I mean, if you look at their numbers, they're halfway through the season, and they have numbers that a lot of us would have liked to have at the end of the season. So the team's legit, fun to watch. They're going to keep plugging along and keep battling everybody, and it's going to be a fun ride. Okay, so I'm going to answer 2 questions from my direct message so I can start catching up here. One of the questions was the hardest throwing pitcher that I faced, and on top of that was also some of the toughest pitchers I faced. You know, Pedro Martinez was tough. Roger Clemens was tough. Those were probably two starters that were the toughest. But I tell you what, to be honest with you, a lot of the tougher pitchers for me were the relievers, because you didn't see them all the time. You didn't see them throw to a lot of people, so you weren't really getting kind of a book on them, so to speak, to have a game plan against them. So you're kind of making it up as you go, as we did a lot back in that day, because we didn't have all the film and all that stuff that they do now. But yeah, those guys were tough, and the relievers were definitely the toughest. And I couldn't name any because there was quite a few. So I want to keep this episode not too long today. The hardest throwing pitchers, I would say Tom Hinkie was the closer for Toronto. He was over 100. I remember facing Mark Wohlers, the closer for Atlanta back in the day, with Tom Glavine, John Smoltz, Greg Maddux. He would come in. I remember looking at the scoreboard in San Diego one time, and it said 104 on a pitch that he threw to me. And fortunately, I fouled it. I was late, but I fouled it, got a piece of it. Then he threw me a nasty split finger about 94 miles an hour, and it dropped out of the zone, and he told me to go take a seat. So I did. So there was probably another four or five guys that threw over 100 miles an hour, but not a whole lot, and thank goodness. The other question was some famous people that I came across at the stadiums when I was playing in the big leagues. And I'd have to say probably John Candy. Met him in Detroit. He was at Tiger Stadium. I don't know if he was filming something in Detroit. I think he was. I've met a lot of soap stars that would come into the stadium. We met golfers, race drivers, basketball players, tennis, all sorts of sports. We met those guys. I remember going to San Francisco when I was with San Diego, and we played the Giants, and Steve Young and Jerry Rice walked into our clubhouse, and I'm like, oh my gosh. We went down to Miami to play the Marlins, saw Dan Marino. He came in the clubhouse. Also John Elway at Denver. I mean, just these athletes that we were seeing, it was pretty cool. And the funny thing is, you know, they walk into our clubhouse and they're looking at us like, oh my gosh, these guys are Major League Baseball players. And we're like, oh my gosh, look who you are. So I think we were all wide-eyed on each other, and pretty special time to see those guys in person and meet them and stuff like that. But the one that I remember the most, if you read the episode details or the title, Tom Selleck, Magnum PI. Met him in Detroit spring training, 1991. It was my second year in big league camp with the Tigers. I didn't make the club in 91, but then I got called up in the middle of 91. But Tom Selleck was there. And if you watch Magnum PI, the old one, for all you young listeners out there, there was an older Magnum PI. He wore a Detroit Tiger hat. I think he was a minority owner at one point. And he was getting ready to film Mr. Baseball. If any of you guys had seen that, I think it came out in 92, but he called the Tigers, asked if he could come down to spring training, go through training with us, be in the clubhouse, see what it was like, and so on and so forth. And he actually played not a lot, but a little bit of time at USC, I think basketball and baseball, but it wasn't a whole lot. But, he had told us before that he wanted to be a baseball player. He didn't want to be an actor, but then somebody got him in the drama classes, I guess, and I think it worked out okay. But he came in, and he was sitting in our locker room, and he was dressing with us. He took batting practice with us. He did the whole thing. And, I mean, he really became like one of the guys, and that's what he wanted. He's very unassuming. Of course, when people found out he was there and fans and stuff, they kind of wait around for him and everything, and he'd go out the back door or whatever. But, you know, it was cool because he was a great guy. He's actually a pretty good athlete. And so we did a lot of pranks back then. And Mike Hinneman, who was our closer for Detroit, he was kind of one of the biggest pranksters. Well, one morning he got there and he went to Tom's locker and took heat bomb, which we call the atomic bomb, and rubbed it all over inside Selleck's jock strap. Yeah. So I don't know how he didn't smell it, because you can smell it. But anyway, he put it on, and soon as he, you know, I guess I can say this, he started sweating. He caught fire. And he was running around, and it was like one of the greatest scenes ever. And I think he said after that, that's when he knew that he felt accepted. And the reason Hinneman had done that to him was to get back at Selleck, because we were taking batting practice. And a lot of times in spring training, you'll face the pitchers, and they're getting their work in. And Hinneman threw him just a cookie fastball down the middle. And we're in Lakeland, which is our A-ball club, the big ballparks where we have spring training. And he took him yard over the right field fence. And I think Hinneman didn't like that. Of course, he didn't like it when they did it during the regular season anyway, but he especially didn't like it if an actor that never really played took him deep. So he got back at him that way. But the coolest thing for me was I was taking ground balls at third base. Selleck was at first base, because in Mr. Baseball, I think he played first base. And all of a sudden I hear, "Scott, Scott." And I look across the field, and Selleck is yelling at me saying, "Hey," and he's like motioning his glove. And he's like, "Hey, throw me some, throw me some." And I'm like, okay, first of all, somebody had to tell him what my name was. I know that. But I'm sitting there fielding these ground balls, and as I'm getting ready to let go of it, I'm like, oh my gosh, I am throwing the ball to Magnum PI. This is amazing, and it's so cool. But he was a great guy. I tried to make sure I didn't throw any in the dirt and hurt him or anything. But Sparky did give him an at-bat in a spring training game, and it was against the Cincinnati Reds. They were in Plant City, I believe. Florida was their spring training. And Rob Dibble came into the game. If some of us old timers, he threw over 100 miles an hour. He was the closer. I think the Reds had just won the World Series. And Tom was going to the plate. Sparky saw them bring in Dibble. And he went up to Tom and said, "You know what, let's wait an inning." And everybody thought, yeah, that's probably a pretty good idea. So anyway, he faced somebody else near the end of the game. He battled, fouled some pitches off. He's an athletic guy. I mean, 6'4". And it was pretty cool. And he ended up striking out, but great guy. It was a lot of fun. He autographed a baseball for me. And it was one of the greatest thrills for me, was just basically playing catch with Magnum PI. So that was really cool. All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to the Ball 5 podcast. Remember to check out stonesapparel.net for some merchandise from Ball 5 and benefit Alzheimer's research. Also on our Instagram feed, Ball 5 podcast, shoot me a direct message for a question and I will answer it on an episode. Appreciate it again. Thank you so much. Until next time.